a million pounds.
Is this a wind-up? This has to be a wind-up.
Apart from the birth of my children, this is the best phone call I've ever received in my life.
This is what it sounds like when people win big with the National Lottery. Will you be next? The National Lottery. Your numbers make amazing happen. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Capital One has a plan to change the world of credit one small good thing at a time. Like finding out if you'll be accepted before you apply, with no risk to your credit score. That's one good thing. Always giving you the APR we offer, no excuses. That's another good thing. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're not saving the world. We simply promise to do credit like everyone's watching. Capital One, that's one good thing.
34.9% APR representative variable. T's and C's apply.
You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dropping the Gloves with John and Tim. And you know, Tim, we do these shows, we do these interviews, and I'm always usually excited for our guests. And then we get this guest, and I was a little, you know, I'll be honest. I really don't like this guy. I really didn't like him. I should use the past tense. I didn't like him at all. And this is really the first time we've talked, and this is the first time he's hearing me say this. He was so hard to play against, him. And I always wanted to kill him, fight him. We never did fight, unfortunately. But then after stepping back from the league and, you know, retiring now for 5 years, he watched the game, and I grew to like him. I like the way he plays the game. He's a very old school type player. So Radko Gudas, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, you did it perfectly. Thanks for the introduction. That means a lot.
Well, it's the truth. I hated you to death on the ice, and you were new coming into the league when I was kind of on the tail end of my career. Started with Tampa Bay, and then obviously jumped up to Philadelphia. I hated your guts. I hated it. Why did I hate you so much? Did you come into the league, and we'll go back and, you know, check on your history. You won a Calder Cup in Norfolk. You know, you have an illustrious career before you made it to the NHL. When you came into the show, did you just want to be a pain in everyone's ass? Like, was it your goal to just get under every tough guy's skin and then just be a thorn in our side always?
Yeah, pretty much. I would love to say something else, but yeah, that was that was my goal, to be noticed and the guys to be more focused on myself than on the ultimate goal of scoring goals and you know what they're supposed to be for. So I was doing a pretty good job, so I'm trying to continue that as my career continues. So I'm not looking for fights every game, but I'm liking the style of the game, and I grew up watching my dad, so it kind of is in my blood, and I'm enjoying every time I get to piss somebody off.
Who was your dad? What did your dad play professional?
Yeah, he did. His name is Leo. He was drafted by Calgary actually when they won Cup in 1990, and then he never made the move over to the North America. He just played all over Europe. He has bronze in Olympics, a couple of bronze in World Championships. So he was, he played quite a lot. So I traveled with him when I was a young guy. So grew up watching him pretty much.
So he was your guy who you looked to growing up, saying, "I want to be like him." There wasn't any NHL player or other Czechoslovakian defenseman who you looked to. It was just your dad.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to get to NHL games to watch, but you know, since internet showed up and YouTube came up, kind of you know, Scott Stevens and Dion Phaneuf, all those guys that played the physical heavy game, I always YouTubed, you know, so that was probably my first few guys that I look after or try to build my game like them.
So you got the first taste of North American hockey in juniors. Then you get drafted by Tampa Bay, third round, pretty good. Then you go to Norfolk. Now, going to Norfolk, did you know that your team was stacked going in there? You had Palat, Panic, Killorn, Corey Conacher, Tyler Johnson. Like, that's a pretty good team. Were you aware that, hey, we're going to win the Calder Cup, and then we're going to jump to Tampa Bay, and we have a chance to, like, make a good run here?
I mean, our first year was we didn't have all these young guys, actually. I was there a year earlier before Palat and Panic made this jump, and Johnson and Killorn and these guys. But that next year, when we start playing, all of a sudden we're winning, and the season we ended with 28 games on a winning streak, and all of a sudden we lost in the playoff 3 games, I think, and we swept the last 2 rounds of the playoffs, and yeah, we were kind of all feeling like, okay, this is it, like we're doing good enough, we have a chance to make the next step and do some more and be more on the ice, maybe cracking the NHL lineup. And then the lockout started, so we kind of got pushed back into the minors. And you know, we moved to Syracuse, so we kind of kept the team that won the cup the year before, and we just kept building. And I thought even being around those guys made the other guys better, because all those guys were ready to make the step to the NHL, and kind of, I think, helped us staying sharp throughout the lockout year and being ready whenever it starts. And most of the guys made the jump that year too.
And then John Cooper was your coach when you guys won in 2012. What was he like as a coach back then? Because obviously he's had a ton of success the last couple of years in Tampa. And maybe, like, why do you think that's translated so well to his NHL coaching career?
I think he understands the players a lot. You know, he talks with them. I don't want to say he's not hard, because he is hard, but he's fair to everybody. He's not afraid to talk to any player the same. I always liked him. We had long bus rides back home. So playing in Norfolk, it was always 12-hour bus ride back. So you drive back, you would talk with everybody pretty much on the bus, because it was a winning culture type of thing. And he was trying to set up the winning culture there. And everybody was following. And I just liked playing for him, and he was always fair to me. So that was really something that I enjoy from a coach, being handled or being talked to in fairness, and what he says means what he does, you know?
Yeah. He doesn't lie to you. That's rare. I've had coaches lie right to my face, saying I'm going to do this, and then you get benched or traded or whatever. But so you're with John Cooper, you're with Tampa Bay, things are going well, you know, you're fitting in nicely, you're in and out of the lineup a little bit, and then you get traded to Philly for Braden Colburn. Was that a surprise? How did you kind of process that?
Yeah, it wasn't an easy day or easy night. I was out for season two. I had my knee surgery done. I had a scope repair, so I wasn't gonna play for the rest of the season. And then I didn't think I was gonna get traded. I was expecting a baby in 2 weeks, and everything kind of happened so quick. And all of a sudden, I'm going to Philly to get my knee checked again after surgery, first baby born, packing everything, moving. So it was an interesting time for myself, and it was first year for my wife being in the States with me, and everything that could happened. So she now kind of everything's just easier, you know?
Yeah. So what's that like? Because you're with this team in the minors, go to Tampa Bay. I kind of experienced it when I was with Chicago, where you could tell, you know, it's a good team. These guys are going to win a lot of Stanley Cups, and I got dealt. And of course they go on and win a bunch of Stanley Cups. Could you tell leaving? It's like, dang, these guys, they're going to win some cups. Like there's a lot of talent here going, because they're bringing in Braden Colburn for that cup push, right? Like there's a reason they're making that trade, which speaks highly for you, because obviously Philly wanted you because they knew what you were and were going to grow into. But is it tough to leave those guys knowing what is in store for them?
Especially after being drafted and playing for them for the minors, and then a bunch of us made the step at the same time. We had like seven or six rookies that year, plus the coach. So it was it felt like a movement, you know, felt like a family is moving from place to place. You know, guys that you play with are all of a sudden on the same level, next level, and you want to be part of. And the team was doing really well, and then exactly I got traded because I felt like I wasn't going to play. That's why I got dealt at the end. They needed a body that will play, and I think they made the right choice at the end for them. He was a experienced guy, but didn't work out that year, and I stayed in the States until my kid could travel. So I was in Tampa all the way pretty much until the Cup Finals. So it was a really hard summer for me to be around the city that I'm not playing for anymore, but everybody is, and they're making it to another play, another round, and all of a sudden finals. And all right, I'll go watch at least one game. And then I came in, saw one game. They scored. Alex Killorn scored the very first goal. The whole crowd went absolutely bananas, and I couldn't be there anymore. So I had to go. It was too much for me.
You went to the game and watched it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Glutton for punishment? That is, oh.
I just, you know, I don't want to say I didn't know what else to do, but, you know, I felt like I grew up with the guys that are playing as players. So I felt like, you know what, if I can go and watch them play, I think I want to, and I want them to success still. And I did want them to success, and it just felt right to go. But at the end, I couldn't.
Oh, you're a better man than I was. There's no way I would have been on the TV, like throwing bad mojo their way. There's no way I would want them to have any success. That's crazy, man. So you go to Philly, obviously a completely different style of play. Tampa, skilled forwards, fast, you know, up and down the ice. They played up-tempo style. And you go to Philly, a little more physical. Your forwards are bigger, stronger. You know, you got the JVRs, you got the Voracheks. What was that like going to Philly? Did you guys was it completely different style, or just tell me about that transition hockey wise? Because it's black and white the way the two teams play.
Yeah, 100%. Also, we had a new coach too since my first year. We signed Dave Hextall, so it was going from Coop to Dave. It was a big change. It was a different style of hockey, different style of breaking out and everything, the zone. So I had to learn all over again what I kind of knew from system-wise already. So, yeah, definitely a big change. The city, too, the city doesn't forgive, you know. So anything bad happens, you know, you have it on your plate from everywhere. So it's good and bad in that situation, too. You kind of want the fans to be in it, but you know they sometimes don't understand how hard it gets at certain times, and they just want more and more. And sometimes it is hard, even harder on the guys to handle themselves well, you know, in that town especially. But you know, being with the players like Jake Voracek and Claude Giroux and Couturier, they all made the transition for me pretty easy. And I felt like I found my new home within a couple of months I played there. And, you know, I have great, great, great memories for the whole city and the organization. So I had some best time of my life playing for the Flyers.
Well, let's talk about – it's interesting what you said. It was hard playing in Philly because, you know, I've had full beer cans thrown at me from Philadelphia. I've had full cups of chew dumped on me in the penalty box. They're a tough crowd. You go to Florida, and I'm going to fast forward now. We didn't plan on this, but you mentioned it's tough to play for those fans. Mm-hmm. And then you go to Florida, and now you're getting a guy in Matthew Tkachuk who had a massive contract dumped on his lap in Calgary. And he goes, you know, I know. I don't want to play in Canada. For the guys in the NHL now, and we talk about it on the show a lot. I talked about it when I played. Why do guys take less money to play in the States than to play in Canada? Because we saw with Johnny Hockey, especially the perfect example this year in Calgary, two guys, they're throwing money at them. Both of them said, we'll take less. I want to go to Columbus, which is a garbage team. Like there's no reason he goes to Columbus. Like they're a glorified AHL team. They trade away Bjorkstrand. It's a bad team this year. And then Matthew comes down to Florida. What's going on? Why does nobody want to play in Canada? And I know, you know, it's a tough answer for you, but there is something to be said about that.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a tough answer. I never played for team, even in junior. I never had the chance to play for Canadian team, but I can only imagine it's so much harder with the media, with everybody knowing so much about the game, everybody analyzing everything 2-3 times. It can get hard for the guys that are watching some of the media, especially now when you're on your phone 3-4 hours a day and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and all these platforms that are available and that are throwing stats and information at you, and everybody has a stat about something else. And I just feel like guys can get caught up in this big circle and big cycle of information that you do not necessarily need, and or you don't even want. And they just I can see how it can be too much for somebody to handle. But you know, when I would get thrown a big contract like this of myself in Canada, I would not hesitate.
Thank you. Yes, what I signed. Yeah, I know you can't answer truthfully or whatever, but it just, everybody we talk to, it's like Canada's, it's just, it's a tough place to play. Well, anyways, we'll move past that. So you're in Philly. I don't want to stay too long there because it just didn't work out. You know, it wasn't for lack of trying. The GM tried. We've gone over Philadelphia. We've had Risto on the show. We've had a lot of guys from Philadelphia. JVR was on our show. It doesn't seem to work. I don't know why. They've tried for years and years. It didn't work. You leave Philly, you go to Washington. Chance to win the cup. Alex Ovechkin. What's it like? The kid, Czechoslovakia, you go to play with Alex Ovechkin. What's that like? Because he's got to be up there on your mantle, a guy who's like, Ovi. What was that like, stepping in the locker room with him?
Well, it was amazing. I still have a little goosebumps just thinking about playing with the great eight, you know. And you know, my seat was right next to his, so it was even better. So it was great. I had a great year there with them. Those guys are unbelievable guys. Starting with Ovi, with the way he performs every night, with the way he is, you wouldn't think he's a first guy in and first guy or last guy out, but he puts in the hours, and it's unbelievable to see him after 2.5 minutes on the ice still have the juice to sprint and beat the guy and being a scoring chance. And you know, with him in the team, you're always in the game because he can score out of 2 shots, 2 goals, and you're back out of nowhere in the game. And it was great to be part of his team. You know, every time in power play practice, we're skating up to him if he feels like shooting or not shooting, if we're supposed to be in the lane or if we can move a little bit to the side so the goalie has to stay in the heat, you know. So it was unbelievable. I'm still enjoying and I'm still having good memories from that year. But unlucky enough, that was the COVID year and everything kind of got thrown for couple months off in the bubble, and it was a tough year for hockey overall. But you know, playing with Ovi was one of the highlights of my career. I played with Yags and Ovi, and you know, those are names I'm proud of to be teammate with.
So let's talk those two guys. Okay, who's got the better shot?
Better shot, Ovi, yeah. For sure.
Where does Jag Yags have Ovi? Like stick work, he's better. Like who's?
Yeah, I would say puck control. Yeah, for sure, making plays. You wouldn't think of even putting the puck through somebody like Yags does. And you know, I still train with this team in Czech in Kladno. We still go on the ice, and sometimes Yags shows up as well. And he still has those hands, and it's unbelievable what he does with the puck and the shot he still has. Unbelievable. But this age, he just keeps himself in a shape where I feel like he could play in the league right now. So he is a specimen, man. It's incredible. Those guys are just naturally strong, big humans. It's fun to see them on the skates too. You know, it's an art.
Oh, yeah. In their prime. Okay. Tough question. In their prime, who are you taking? Ovi or Yeggs?
Well, I'm thinking Yaggs. He would pass me the puck a little more, you know? Please check, too. You know, it's hard to say no to Yaggs.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
We teased out the interview, and we got a lot of questions from Caps fans asking about your time there. And one of the ones that came up was, like, a good Ovi story. If someone wants to ask you, like, what's it like to play with him? What's it like being a stallmate, a buddy with his? Like, what's the story you tell him?
There's a few stories. I don't know if I can air them out, to be honest. But I don't know.
Maybe something on the ice. Was he like an extra coach on the bench too? Was he saying stuff to the D at all?
You know what? We did have these D drills. So we're at the end of the practice. He would, the D coach would take the D. We would do some drills. The offensive coach or the forward coach will take the forwards, do some drills for the goalies and this and this. And we're shooting this one timers, and Ovi comes in and he stops the whole D drill and tells Carly to pass him 10 pucks. So he goes, stands up in the upper circle. Johnny passes in 10 pucks, and he's like, all right, go on. Skates off. We're all standing there holding the sticks. All right.
All right. He interrupted the drill because he wanted to take some shots.
Yeah, he literally stopped the whole B drill and took some shots and skated off. All right, that's good for me today. And skated off. So I was
do whatever you want, Tim. You're Alex Ovechkin, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, it was it was great. You couldn't be even like – it wasn't like we're mad at him. It was like, wow, yes. I wanted to see this, actually.
That's funny. Well, Radko, okay, we've got through all that fun stuff. Now let's talk about the bad stuff. You're the first guy we've interviewed who, when you Google your name, you know, it usually goes salary, stats. Yours is criticism, mm-hmm. controversy. You're 32 years old. You've been in the league for what, 7 years, 8 years now?
This is my 11, I believe.
11? So you've been around. You know, you're no stranger to controversy. You've had plenty of suspensions.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What's it like playing on the edge? We've talked to guys who play on the edge all the time. We've talked to guys who toe the line. What is it like in today's NHL where, like, Bettman hates the way you play? He doesn't want that type of hockey. He wants fast pace. He wants goal scoring. He wants, you know, a very entertaining type of hockey in his mind. Mm-hmm. Is it hard going into every season knowing I'm probably going to get suspended once or twice this year and I'm not doing anything really illegal where everyone's just watching you?
Yeah, I kind of had to find a way to live with that. But yeah, it's not easy. It's the way I made it this far. So there's... it would be really hard for me to switch my game now and try to stay in the league. So I feel like I'm useful with the way I am playing and by adapting by every year, guys are getting so much smaller, faster. When I got drafted, I was probably the smallest defenseman on that draft. And now the guys are 5'7", 5'8", no problem getting drafted, you know? So it is a little different than when I first started. Everybody was so much bigger than me, so much stronger. When I went my first year, I was probably 215, 216. But slowly, as the year goes on, I have to be quicker and more agile because of these guys are smaller and quicker. And it is hard to play on the edge. I'm not gonna lie; it's pretty much thinking the way you were thinking 10 years ago. It's completely different than now. You have to watch out not to, if I'm hitting somebody in the middle, open ice hit, I got to watch out to make sure he will be okay, you know?
Yeah.
So instead of, in the minors, you're making sure the guy pretty much gets the hardest hit you can possibly deliver. But this is so much different than, adapting helped me staying out of the Department of Player Safety box for a few years now. So hopefully that will continue, but I'm not stopping being physical player. I'm not I don't want to say not too worried. I am worried, but I'm playing with caution a lot more than I did before, and learned my lessons being reckless, I would say. And like I said, Philly Philly, I don't want to blame it on Philly, but Philly kind of is the hard-nosed game. So it kind of felt, I don't want to say right, but it felt that's the way the hockey is supposed to be played there. I'm not proud of any of the suspensions, but, you know, it happens, and I tried to learn from it, and I think I'm doing a good job. But, yeah, the Googling my name is not the easiest way when my kids are going to start Googling it, you know?
We're in the same boat. Google my name. It's terrible things that come up. And a lot of it is just fans and the media just ripping you up and down. Tim, our podcast host, my co-host, he wrote a lengthy blog about how much he hates me when he was living in Boston. Like because I laid a clean hit on Louis Erickson, but Louis, you know, fell down and bonked his head on the ice, and I got, I think, a 7-game suspension. So it's just one of those things that happens. But going back to changing your game, a lot of guys can't do that. A lot of guys, you know, you learn how you play the game and you don't have the ability to transition. You know, I was a physical fighter. It was hard for me to be, well, you have to learn how to back check, play defense, play offense, like contribute in other ways. Mm-hmm. Did you lose weight? You said you can't, you know, you used to be at 216, 220. Did you have to shed some pounds to be able to keep up with these smaller guys? Or did you just maybe play less aggressive on the ice?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say I played less aggressive. I still feel like I play pretty aggressive. It's just different parts of the ice are more being used. I would say more of a D zone than anything, or more of the boards than center ice. But yeah, I'm down like 14, 16 pounds since I started playing. So it's, but it continues. It's not like I was 220 and then I'm down to 205, you know, it's continuously slowly, getting rid of the extra pounds to just to stay within the level of energy and within the level of speed of the game around. And yeah, it's, like you said, it's mostly the fans that love and hate, you know. Then you're playing for their team and you're the best thing that ever happened, and all of a sudden you get traded to the other team and you're the worst thing that ever happened to them. So it's, every coin has two sides, you know, on these articles.
A million pounds.
Is this a wind-up? It has to be a wind-up.
Apart from the birth of my children, this is the best phone call I've ever received in my life.
This is what it sounds like when people win big with the National Lottery. Will you be next? The National Lottery. Your numbers make amazing happen. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Sell your car the motorway way, where dealers compete to give you their best price.
Dealers compete?
Welcome to the Car Dealers Darts Championship. Dealer 5 throws a bid of £11,800. Dealer 23, £12,000. Dealer 40 throws £12,200.
I got £12,200. No way.
Yes, way. Motorway, the way to sell your car. T's and C's apply. Visit motorway.co.uk.
So you're playing in Florida now. You guys, Stanley Cup aspirations. You know, you have the team, President's Trophy last year. We know that. You play against some pretty solid competition every single night. Obviously, Tampa, you're very familiar with those guys. You got Toronto, you got New York, you got Pittsburgh, you got Washington, you play with them. Who's the toughest guy to play against? Who's the toughest line that you just – you're going into that city, you're like, oh, boy, here we go. This is going to be tough.
Toughest line? I gotta say, I played with Gustav Forsling, and he's an unbelievable skater, and he outskated pretty much everybody. So it was fun to be his partner last year, and I can say we really had a line that we were like afraid of, we were in one type of day. But I didn't enjoy playing against like Johansson and Duchesne. You know, those are guys that are I don't want to say sneaky good; they're good. But it was, they always find something, you know.
No kidding.
Like, so it's probably them that really stand in my mind right now. It was maybe also because we had the short season that was, and we were part with Nashville, so we get to see them a lot in that year. But yeah, man, there's always a line on a team that is scary to have in a D zone, you know. In Washington, you know, they're winning it right on Ovi. And if you're the net front D, you know you're getting, you're hoping it's going to miss you and it's going to miss the net. Otherwise, it's either a nice bruise or it's in the net. So I would say Washington is another one with Kuzi on the center and Willie and Ovi on the wingers. That's a scary line to play against, especially when we had them in the playoffs last year too. It was like, all right, boys, you got to brace for the impact here a little bit and try to weather the first few storms. But I guess last year we did. And unfortunately, it didn't end up too soon for us, I would say.
Is he your favorite partner you ever played with in your career so far, Forsling? Does he kind of match your style?
Yeah, I was really happy with the way we played and with the way we performed. So he was one of the favorites for sure. I played with some great defensemen. My first year, I played with Matty Carl for Tampa. He was a guy that I couldn't say good enough things for us. He helped me so much with my career. So that was one of the first guys that I really cherished. I played with Michael Del Zotto in Philly
DZ. Yeah.
Yeah. He helped me too. Robert Hagg, when I played with him, we were same type of style defenseman. So that was fun to feel like the Bash Bros in the back. And with Gustav, it is still awesome. And he's going to be even better player than he showed last year, I think.
So let's talk about Florida. President's Trophy, you mentioned you got by Washington in seven games, and then you just ran into Tampa. Got swept. Not the outcome anybody wanted. Massive changes this offseason. Changes to coach. You know, your MVP candidate, Huberto, goes out. Kachuk comes in. What happened last year in the playoffs? Have you wrapped your head around it yet? Can you just – is there a reason?
I just think we couldn't get through their defense. It felt like they know exactly what to do. There are five guys standing in front of Vasi. We're trying hammering pucks from all over the place. Everything would bump right in front of them. They would chip it out and wait for their breaks. They would get one break a game, two break a game, and they would score on them, or they would get more. But they were so efficient in their odd man chances. If it was 2-on-2, they were dumping the puck out, felt like. If it was 3-on-2, they would play with it, and they would just wait and stand in front of Vasi again. And we would be in their zone for 3.5 minutes, rotating the puck, shooting from everywhere. Everything would bump right in front of them. They would chip it out, and they would come out of this shift and score a goal. So it was really frustrating, that part. Also, the second game, you know, you get scored on 3 seconds before the end of the game, kind of. Everybody sees it himself already in the overtime. All right, let's go to overtime. Let's fight for game two. And all of a sudden, you're going in the locker room down to rip. That doesn't help your confidence at all. It is, it's actually a big downer. But, you know, after that, I still think the third game, we played the best we could. Obviously, I think the third game was Tampa's best game on that series. They probably outplayed us the most. But then again, when we played game four, I thought we had our chances. We have everything going. Everybody was feeling good. Everybody was kind of having the mindset, okay, we have to throw everything at them, because if we don't, we're done. And Vasilevsky just stood there on his head and stopped everything. So it was a very frustrating series for us, and not just for us. I would assume even for the management, since the changes were this drastic. So I don't think they saw us coming or losing against Tampa at all, and certainly not in this way. Because I felt like throughout the season we played against them pretty fair games. We played against them very. High level intense hockey, and I thought we built pretty good rivalry. And in the rivalry, going down for a rip in the playoff, that's a stinger that hurts. And you know, it was not a good mood after the series in the locker room. You know, everybody knew that this is not the way we got to handle these games. So it was a very big down feeling after that series in our locker room.
So thinking ahead to this year, whether you match up against Tampa again, or it's Carolina or New York, one of those other strong teams, like, what has to happen differently? What kind of would change the result for you guys to go on a run?
Well, we got to run them over, you know. I guess that's the only thing that We just have to shed all the negative energy we had out of this, all the frustration that we had with the goalie, and we have to find a way. We have to find a different ways to score goals, because we didn't have a problem throughout the season score goals. I felt like we're scoring out of everywhere, which was it was awesome to be part of. Your third, fourth line is producing unbelievably, and your top two lines are feeling it. So it was great. It was great throughout the whole season. So I would say just try to feel as good as we could from the season to bring that in the playoffs. You know, maybe even the chasing of the president trophy, you know, could be one of the reasons why you feel like, oh, we're done. We won the president. We've done something, you know. And Washington came in and they put us pretty much on our ass. So we were fighting back in the series as well. We were down 1-0, 2-1. So it was a hard fought series even against Washington. So I feel like we have to address, or we have to understand that every series is different, that we're not kids anymore, you know, and make sure that we run the teams over.
Well, what's it like in the off season when your best player, you go to bed and you wake up the next day and it's like, holy cow, like, who? Johnny's gone. We got Tkachuk. Was that a shocker? Because I played for a good 10 years and I've never had my best player just gone, replaced with somebody else.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy day, crazy night. I was in shock, to be honest, to see it first. We actually did meet up after on one of my teammates' wedding. We saw everybody again, or I saw Hubie, and everybody was in shock. As I would say, they were in shock. Even they were in shock. You know, not just the people around or people in the business, but they were in shock as well. I don't think Johnny saw it coming at all. But you know, he committed now in Calgary. He's happy there, and I wish him nothing but well. But you know, it was very interesting the way it all happened quickly. I guess I wasn't really paying that much attention how much other what was going on in Calgary. Being in Europe, it's hard for me to keep up with the things that are going on in the summer. But I'm excited to meet Matthew. But it was not an easy text message to text him, you know, you know, what happened, or, hey man, sorry, I loved you, but now watch out, you know?
Yeah. It's gotta be. So is Florida a better team now? Cause that's what you're trying to figure out at the end of the day, right? I guess they figured they needed a little more sandpaper, a little more, you know, juice up front. Do you think getting Tkachuk, equally offensively gifted, maybe has a different set of tools in his tool bag, is Florida a better team this year? I know it's hard to answer. It's preseason, hasn't even started. You haven't even gone to camp. But what are the expectations this year for the Panthers? Excuse me.
I believe we are. Yeah, I think we're going to be harder to play against. I think we added some experience, some size. We got guys that are fast, that are pests, you know, pretty much. So I think we're built. I think we still have a lot of skill. I don't think we don't have necessarily as much skill as we had last year, but at the end, it might have cost us in the playoffs to have that much skill and not sandpaper. So I believe we're built more for playoffs than we were even last year. And they did these changes for a reason. So they believe in this. I do believe in the group too, because every time I see the guys on the ice, I see Barkey, I see Eki, they're trying to get better every day. And they're the best players on the team, and everybody tries to follow. So it's hard not to follow Barkey and these guys, you know, when you see the amount of skill and commitment they have. So if sandpaper is what we needed last year, I believe we got that, and we are better for the playoffs. Yes.
All right. This is a fighting show, Radko. We talk about fighting. Mm-hmm. The elephant in the room. You're with the Philadelphia Flyers. You square up with Kevin Bieksa. Listen, you're a tough cat. I know that. You fought the toughest guy in the league. Deloria, in my mind, he's the toughest guy in the league right now. I think the guy's an absolute killer. You fought him with the Philadelphia Flyers. You're outmatched. You're outweighed. This guy's like, he's a killer. He's a top tier guy. You're fighting Kevin BX, excuse me. Did you expect that punch? Did you expect him to come in? Obviously not, or else you would have blocked it. Walk me through the start of the fight. Walk me through it all, because it's interesting.
I think we had a little scrum before we were going to go, before I went in front of their net, and he pushed me, I pushed him, then I tripped him, and then we both got kicked out for two minutes. So we kind of played 4-on-4 hockey, and we're in the box, and he's like, you want to go? I'm like, yeah. So we just skated out of the penalty box, dropped the gloves, and you know, until then, I felt like you kind of grab first and then you start punching. But I thought wrong that time. And all of a sudden I'm on the ice. I'm like, I did not expect a hit from this angle either. So I don't even have the stability on that from that angle. So it kind of just hit me perfectly. I did not see that coming at all. So. You know what though? I was happy. I was not the only guy he did it to that year. So that kind of was in my book, like, all right, I'm not the only one. So it kind of made me feel a little better, but, still one of the most embarrassing fights in my career, I would say, being the guy getting one punched. But, you know what, good for him, man. He's a tough guy too. And, he did everything right to be in that position, put me down like this. So. I don't necessarily like to rewatch that YouTube video, but I knew it's out there.
So you go back in the locker room, you're on the bus. Do the guys give you a hard time for it? Like, you should have maybe watched that one, Radko. Did they?
No, we played home, so I was in the car. Nobody had to talk to me after that. But you know what? I came back after the fight, and I lined up for next shift, and Ryan gets up, skates by me, and he's like, hey, good to see you back out here, big boy. So I'm kind of like, all right, he knows this guy is killer too, so I guess I'm fine. So it was nice for him to skate by me and say those words. Even he probably doesn't like me either, or I don't think he ever did like me. So it was a nice gesture from him, and I'm sure I heard it from somebody else. I got chirped for it many, many times, but I just, there's nothing I can do about it now. So
no, and BX, like, he's a tough guy. I think he's a gold gloves boxer. Like he's a tough, tough guy. So there's no shame in, like, listen, I would say 95% of the league, there's no way they would drop the gloves with the Kevin BX, because he's that tough. And you had the guts to drop your gloves, and you dropped the gloves with Nick Delorier. What's that like? Speak on that. Cause I know when I fought some tough guys, I would get nervous, and I was 6'8", 270. You know, what's it like dropping the mitts with a guy who's just, he's tougher. Like he's a tough guy.
Yeah, he's a big man too. He's got a big, big frame too. So I felt like it doesn't matter if you grab him on the left or right, he's going to throw the other hand. So yeah, he's a very, very tough guy, and I'm happy with the deal he signed, actually. Like he earned it. He earned every bit of it. And you know what? My very first experience in the United States was in a Los Angeles Kings camp, and I was there as a defenseman, and one of the other defensemen was Nick Delorier. So we were kind of,
is that right?
Young bucks trying to fight for the same spots. After development camp, I went up to play in junior in Everett, and he went in somewhere else. And all of a sudden I see him being a forward. I believe his first, His first job was in Buffalo as well. So all of a sudden he's a forward in Buffalo, and you know, he fought his way through all the way to here. So dropping the gloves with him, never easy. I think I did it twice maybe. And I don't think I won once. So he's a big man. He knows what he's doing. So it's never easy to fight these big guys. But at the end, if I hit somebody and they think wrongly of the hit, I have no problem with dropping the gloves if I think it was not within the rules. But you know, he's a big, strong man too.
You know whose job he took in Buffalo? He took my job. So he came to Buffalo from LA in a trade. I remember him getting called up, and I was like, man, this guy's fast. And he can skate pretty well for a guy his size, and his arms are so incredibly long. I think he's like 6'1", but his arms are the size of a guy who's 6'4", 6'5". So I was like, man, this guy's like he could do some damage. And sure enough, that was my last year. They're like they replaced me with him. So I'm happy for him. But yeah, he's a good little player.
Sorry to hear, but yeah, happy for him too. You know. I don't think he would have beat you up, to be honest, though, if you guys really had to fight for the job. But
yeah. No, I asked him, and he didn't want to fight. But I was a dinosaur. You know, I was like one of the last true dinosaurs kind of just patrolling the ice. Once I left, maybe Revo fits that mold a little bit, but I think he skates a little better than I do. But yeah, there's not many one-dimensional players. Like I was looking at my stats compared to yours. I'm like, I got to have as many points as Radko. And you got a bunch of points. Like you put up 20 points a year. Like it's nobody's business. And I put up, I think, 10 in my career in like 300 games. So you're a good player.
Well, I flip the puck a lot, you know, so I got fast forward. So I get to flip the puck a lot, you know,
but no, in all honesty though, for the perception you get this, oh, he's a headhunter. He's a goon. He's just out there. You know, he's a terrible player. You're decent. You're not, you know, useless in the offensive zone. Is it frustrating? Cause I know myself, I got pissed off when people were like, you can't even skate. What are you doing? You shouldn't even be in the league. I'm like, I am actually okay. Is it frustrating for you when people are like, you're a joke, Radko? Like, what are you doing out here? All you do is get suspensions. You're like, look at my stats. Look at my years. Like, obviously I'm doing something right.
You know what? I don't really pay attention to many of the media.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not a big social media guy, and I don't read many articles and many comments, and it takes me a while to answer on any, on a social media platform.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really not that big of a deal to me. You know, if you want to write something, feel free to write anything. I'm not going to even react. If that's your opinion, you have your own right to have your own opinion. I have mine too. So somebody hates dentists, you know.
Yeah. That's really funny.
So, yeah, so, okay.
Go ahead.
You're 32 years old. You're heading into a contract season. I know the expectations for the Panthers are pretty sky high. It's cup or bust. But what about you personally? Like, what are your personal goals for the year? What's a good season for Radko Gudas?
A good season for me is making the playoffs and being the best player I can be for my teammates. And if I can help them with winning, that's ultimately the goal for me. You know, I know my role. I know the way I can play, and if I can help everybody else stand a couple inches taller on the bench and feel more comfortable on the ice, that's what I would love to do this year and contribute in any way. I would get the support from the coaches. So, you know, I'm in this league for a while now too, and you know, I'm open to anything. At the end of the year, I have 4 kids to take care of and a family that's excited to be anywhere or excited to be sort of staying in the same place. So I got a really lucky job to be playing in this league. So I'm just gonna take it as it goes and trying to be the best version of myself that I can be for this season and see where it takes me. I don't really have a skyrocketing expectation from myself, but I know what I'm capable of, and I did that last 2-3 years of my career, that I'm getting better and better with the age, I believe. So I just see what happens. You know, it's exciting time to be down here and playing for the Panthers, because the team is, like you said, very good, and I'm excited to be part of this and building something here with the guys.
How you mentioned your wife, and it's beautiful. You have 4 kids. I love that. How is it on her? Because is she involved in your career? Does she know the ins and outs? My wife kind of wasn't too involved. She didn't really like hockey. She was just like, she'd go to the rink, grab dinner, grab a couple of drinks, and go home. Is your wife invested in your career?
You know what? If we had this discussion a couple, I would say 2 years ago, about what's icing, you know? So can't say she's really that much into hockey. She knows when we win or lose most of the times. But when she goes to the games, she worries about all 4 of them somewhere and being in the lounge with the other kids. So it's very hard for her to be away from grandmas and grandpas and not really having much help except for nannies or the sitters. So it is very hard for her, but I think she's handling it pretty well. And if she wouldn't, we wouldn't have him, you know? So it was, kind of like, all right, we can have another one. I can do this. It's still fun. It's still enjoyable. I'm still enjoying my time with them, and they are still. And maybe I'm happy that she doesn't understand the hockey as much as some other ones, you know. So we get to talk about something else, and hockey is really not the topic in the house unless my boy is ready for practice. But other than that, the only one that drags hockey in my home is my dad when he comes over and watches every possible hockey game that is on TV. So it's probably that much.
Where do you end up? Just say you play 3 more years. Do you move back home to check, or you stay in the States? Well, where's the final home for the Gudas family?
Right now, Czech Republic. It is a lot of work with the kids, and the grandmothers and grandfathers are really big help for us. They're enjoying. They have the strength to help us with it, and I'll be really grateful for that. But you never know. If I end up playing here another few years, maybe they won't be as happy to move back. Maybe they have all the buddies down here. They go to school here, and I saw it happening with some other guys, with some other Czech guys that wanted to go back. They signed another deal, and all of a sudden the kids are 14, 15, and they refuse to go back to Czech Republic because all of their friends and all of their commitments and sports and dream school, all of a sudden they're here until they're 45, 50, and they don't even want to leave. So it's right now the plan is to go to Czech, but the plan always changes.
It's fluid. Is Krejci Czech Republic, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave Krejci is Czech, yeah.
What do you think about him coming back?
I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome that somebody can leave the NHL, go play another league for a year, and then still be wanted back here in the NHL. So I think that's absolutely great for the guys, for the sport, for everything. I have nothing but respect for what he did with this. You know, it's so much. I don't know how to even explain it. I'm just enjoying seeing that being possible too.
Now, why did he leave? Did he just want to go home? You probably know him better than we do.
I believe there is something that he wanted for his dad to see him play for his hometown team. So I believe he promised him something like that. So when he had the chance, maybe it's a little easier the season in Europe on the body that is the NHL season. You know, when you only play 50 games or 55 games within a span of a month and a half longer than us playing 82 games with a month shorter season than there is in the in Europe, so it takes a little less toll on the body. So I believe that could help him. That would be one of the reasons why he would choose doing something like that too. But you can tell on the league that he was a jump away from everybody else.
Yeah, that's funny. Are you going to pull a Yags and play to your 45, 48, 50?
No.
What?
I'm not Yags. Yags is only one.
There's only one Yags. Well, there's only one Radko Gudas. And now listen, I could talk to you all day, but you have 4 kids. I have 7 kids, and mine just got back from the library. So they're like scratching at the door to get me out of my office here. So thank you, Radko, for coming on. We didn't grill you. I was like planning on just grilling you with questions, just saying, I hate you so much. Like, let's just talk about my hatred towards you. Why didn't you fight me? Why do I hate you so much? But I couldn't. You're too enjoyable guy. What did you do to me?
Thanks. I mean, I thought the toughest guys on the ice are the nicest guys off the ice. So likewise.
What did you think about playing against me? Did you think I was just terrible? You're like, oh, this guy sucks.
No, I was just hoping you're not going to dump it in my corner, and I was going to be too late to be another, a commercial on the wall probably. So I was making sure I get the puck away from myself before you can make it towards me. So that
it's impossible. It's impossible to be too late for me with my, I was always the slowest. It's impossible.
no, my, but I enjoyed playing against, big guys like you because, I felt like if you're hating me, then I'm doing something right. Or if you're coming after me, that there's more guys on your team that are thinking of me more than they're thinking of the game, maybe. So it was just part of the job or part of the rep I wanted to put on myself and carry myself around with that. So I was just being prick to everyone.
No, and you're doing a good job, because when I would play against you, and I know now other players, because we talk, they're like, they know when you're on the ice. Like that's the biggest compliment. It's like when you step on the ice, you scan the D and you're like, okay, there's number three. There's Gudas. You're number three, right?
Number seven now, but I was three in Philly too.
Yeah, so they know when you're on the ice. So you're doing a good job, and you nailed this podcast. I'll let you get out of here. Tim, anything else?
No, thanks for coming on, man. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate it.
All right, we're going to check back in mid-season, and we'll have to figure out a way to get a hold of him, because, gosh, Instagram, it took you, I think, 3 months to respond. So we'll figure that out off air. But, yeah, thank you, Radical, for coming on. Good luck this year, man. Hopefully everything goes well with you and the kids. And, cheers, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
A million pounds.
Is this a wind-up? It has to be a wind-up.
Apart from the birth of my children, this is the best phone call I've ever received in my life.
This is what it sounds like when people win big with the National Lottery. Will you be next? The National Lottery. Your numbers make amazing happen. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Capital One has a plan to change the world of credit one small good thing at a time. Like finding out if you'll be accepted before you apply, with no risk to your credit score. That's one good thing. Always giving you the APR we offer, no excuses. That's another good thing. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're not saving the world. We simply promise to do credit like everyone's watching. Capital One. That's one good thing.
34.9% APR representative variable. T's and C's apply.